Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The music you're listening to now is a piece by composer Caroline Shaw called Plan and Elevation, Part 5, The Beech Tree, performed by the Orchestra of St. Luke's. This song opens the first Sounds and Stories event of the season, hosted by David Hyde Pierce and guest curated by author, photographer, and critic Teju Cole. The concert features readings from his story, Radia, which works that he chose to pair with his writing. Teju Cole is the author, most recently, of Fernvie, a book of photographs. His other books include Open City and Every Day is for the Thief, and an essay collection, Known and Strange Things. You can watch the entire Sights and Sounds series, including Teju Cole's concert, by visiting oslmusic.org/event. Tickets include access to a concert recording on demand for 7 days after it airs. And Teju Cole, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's nice to be here.
How did you become involved with curating a chamber-focused program for the Orchestra of St. Luke's?
Well, that's two questions there. One is about the involvement with St. Luke's, which was sort of very slowly in the offing for the past couple of years. The reason it's a chamber concert is because we're in a pandemic and you can't have too many people on stage at the same time. So that was an outcome of the restrictions that we're under. About a couple of years ago, I talked to Jim Rowe, who's president of OSL, and he wanted me to be involved in a Bach program that they were doing. And the timing didn't work out. I just had a lot of things going on. But late last year, when he wanted me to think about possibly doing something with this remote format, it just seemed too intriguing to pass up. So that's how that happened.
What was special about working on this project for you? You do so many different things. What was unique about this?
Oh, for me, it's really like being a kid in a candy store. I love music so much. It is such a gift that I live in an age in which I want to listen to something and I can put on a CD or find a streaming site or go to YouTube or go to a concert. It is really one of the great consoling privileges of life. And now to have an opportunity to curate, you know, it's almost as if the virtual becomes 3D, becomes real. I could go to a world-class orchestra and say, would you play this piece and then play this piece and then play this piece? You know, it's really like being an emperor. So that's what was intriguing about it. I've seen Orchestra of St. Luke's in concert, and just that I could mention 5 or 6 or 7 pieces and they could go rehearse and that could come to life in a concert. I simply couldn't say no.
Following up on your kid in the candy store idea, There's a lot of candy. There's a lot to pick from. What was your selection process? What was it like? What was the selection process like? How did you prioritize? How did you think about creating this program?
Well, I mean, I think what people call classical music has so much in it that's rich and wonderful. But I think it also comes saddled with certain ideas about it's a certain class of people and you have to behave a certain way. And it means that there's an in-group of those of us who are in the know. Hmm. And that's not my experience of it at all. You know, I like how this music sounds. You know, in my daily life, I listen to all kinds of music, classical and jazz and so-called world music and so-called jazz music and hip-hop and so on. And it's just a continuous flow. And even within classical music itself, there is such a breadth of possible experiences. So the first thing I wanted to do was to make sure that I wasn't drawing any artificial lines of time periods or automatically just putting in stuff people would expect. I wanted it to be free and flowing, but, you know, all those pieces needed to talk intelligently to each other. So when you look at the program, I have a piece by Hildegard von Bingen, who is writing 1,000 years ago, you know, and I have stuff by Yvette Janine Jackson that is written a couple of years ago, you know, and these are two women 1,000 years apart. And yet there's a coherence in the language so that for somebody who's listening, you know, this is not a reading exercise. This is listening. For somebody who's listening, this music is coherent. The pieces are all talking to each other.
What do you think people get out of hearing the juxtaposition of these contemporary compositions and then these sort of more legacy?
And the older pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one way to think about it in any musical program is that someone has decided what experience you're going to have over the next 1 hour, over the next hour and a half, right? What is being curated is an experience of time. And regardless of what you put into that container of time, the real magic is that a bunch of people are experiencing the unfolding of time together. So that's the first thing. It is a drawing to attention. That is what I'm hoping for, that with everything else that's going on in the world, people have come together around this program and for an hour and 20 minutes are hearing the same thing. And in this case, I really wanted it to be something that was cognizant of the feelings of sorrow and solidarity that we've all been dealing with in the past 12 months. So that was really my guiding principle, to hold us into the time of the concert together in a way that's introspective, challenging, very beautiful also, like the Caroline Shaw piece that you opened your program with. So ravishing, you know, so harmonically intriguing, and it's taking you on a kind of a magical journey. So that's the goal. It is really about, I would say it's about the pandemic, but it doesn't use that word anywhere.
My guest is Teju Cole. We're talking about the Orchestra of St. Luke's Sound and Stories. His contribution will be available until March 10th. Teju, the program is framed around your story, Radia. What is Radia about?
Yes. Radia is about a traveler who arrives in a new city. New to her, but the city itself has only been recently constructed. This is a story that is a kind of a fable. For those readers who have read Invisible Cities by Italo Calvino, it's that kind of fable. It's a kind of a mysterious account of a foreign land, but a land that has an uncanny number of things in common with our own experiences. So the city of Radia is a kind of a city of pain. and how people there are processing that, and how our mysterious traveler gets very involved with life in Radia.
Let's listen to an excerpt from your reading of Radia. This is the beginning of the story.
And after one of those journeys that involved the drawing of an imaginary line across the earth, a flight that brought her to the gleaming nowhere of an airport in the early hours of the morning, the traveler caught another flight around noon and continued her journey. She spent 6 hours on this second plane, or it might have been 16 hours. The difference between the two was difficult to tell in that airborne suspension. The traveler's wristwatch made one claim, her calendar made another, and her jet-lagged body made a third. Finally, around midday, the plane began its approach for landing, and the traveler could see from the air what resembled, in almost every respect, a familiar metropolis. The same twisting highways, the same elongated parks, the same repeated towers. It reminded her, as aerial views always did, of what her mother had once told her about the collapse of enormous stars, which could shrink to a width as small as that of a city.
That was Teju Cole reading from Radia. So it's interesting that when thinking about time in that reading and thinking about the way we've all been experiencing time, and your comment earlier about time spent together listening to this music, or if not together, the same amount of time listening to the same thing at some time.
That's right.
Has time changed for you, or how have you changed thinking about time in the past year?
I would say the main thing is a feeling that there isn't that much of it. You know, this has been a year of thinking about mortality. The idea that each one of us will run out of time has come so much to the fore in my mind, but the effect of it on me has not been to drive me into pessimism. It has been to drive me into a sense of urgency. You know, I think so many of us have experienced that in the past 12 months. This question of, how do I want to live? What do I want to do with what time I have? Given that I don't know how much time it is, you know, and these are sort of basic philosophical facts of everybody's life. We've always known this, but there was something about this past year that really concentrated the mind.
Last May, you contributed to an essay, the New York Times Magazine series about the pandemic, and yours was titled, "We Can't Comprehend This Much Sorrow. History's first draft is almost always wrong, but we still have to try and write it." What have you observed that you think we as a culture have learned about what's important in life since last March?
I really have been impressed and consoled by how many people got involved in things like mutual aid, people who got involved in finding ways to help others, people who started initiatives that were on the level of the community, sometimes an online community. It really brought out the activists and public-spirited aspect of many people's lives. I think the campaigns we saw for racial justice are connected to the sense of urgency that the pandemic gave us. So that has been amazingly encouraging, because, of course, the counterpoint to that is that all the bad things in human nature and all the sad things about the current construction of our society also came to the fore. Right. And I think right now, for example, we are seeing something that legitimately could be called vaccine apartheid, both on a national level and on an international level. And this is not OK, but this is definitely an outcome of the sense of human greed. So the pandemic has been a kind of an X-ray for showing whatever is good in us is really becoming visible. And whatever has always been bad is very unfortunately hyper visible as well. It's a moment of clarity, and as I said, also a moment of deciding how would we rather live.
I've been speaking with author and photographer Teju Cole. You can watch the entire Sights and Sounds series, including Teju Cole's concert, by visiting oslmusic.org/events. Tickets include access to a concert recording on demand for 7 days after it airs. Teju Cole, thank you so much for spending time with us.
It's great to talk to you, Allison. Thank you for taking the time.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.